Chapter 3. There is satisfactory evidence that many, professing to be original witnesses of the Christian miracles, passed their lives in labors, dangers, and sufferings, voluntarily undergone an attestation of the accounts which they delivered, and solely in consequence of their belief of those accounts, and that they also submitted, from the same motives, to new rules of conduct. Of the primitive condition of Christianity, a distant only and general view can be acquired from heathen writers. It is in our own books that the detail and interior of the transaction must be sought for, and this is nothing different from what might be expected. Who would write a history of Christianity but a Christian? Who is likely to record the travels, sufferings, labors, or successes of the apostles but one of their own number or of their followers? Now these books come up in their accounts to the full extent of the proposition which we maintain. We have four histories of Jesus Christ. We have a history taking up the narrative from his death and carrying on an account of the propagation of the religion and of some of the most eminent persons engaged in it for a space of nearly 30 years. We have, what some may think still more original, a collection of letters written by certain principal agents in the business upon the business and in the midst of their concern and connection with it. And we have these writings severally attesting the point which we contend for, viz. The sufferings of the witnesses of the history, and attesting it in every variety of form in which it can be conceived to appear, directly and indirectly, expressly and incidentally, by assertion, recital, and allusion, by narratives of facts, and by arguments and discourses built upon these facts, either referring to them or necessarily presupposing them. I remark this variety because in examining ancient records or indeed any species of testimony, it is, in my opinion, of the greatest importance to attend to the information or grounds of argument which are casually and undesignedly disclosed, forasmuch as this species of proof is, of all others, the least liable to be corrupted by fraud or misrepresentation. I may be allowed, therefore, in the inquiry which is now before us, to suggest some conclusions of this sort as preparatory to more direct testimony. Our books relate that Jesus Christ, the founder of the religion, was, in consequence of his undertaking, put to death as a malefactor at Jerusalem. This point at least will be granted, because it is no more than what Tacitus has recorded. They then proceed to tell us that the religion was, notwithstanding, set forth at this same city of Jerusalem, propagated thence throughout Judea, and afterwards preached in other parts of the Roman Empire. These points also are fully confirmed by Tacitus, who informs us that the religion, after a short check, broke out again in the country where it took its rise, that it not only spread throughout Judea, but had reached Rome, and that it had there great multitudes of converts, and all this within 30 years after its commencement. Now these facts afford a strong inference in behalf of the proposition which we maintain. What could the disciples of Christ expect for themselves when they saw their master put to death? Could they hope to escape the dangers in which he had perished? "If they had persecuted me, they will also persecute you," was the warning of common sense. With this example before their eyes, they could not be without a full sense of the peril of their future enterprise. Secondly, all the histories agree in representing Christ as foretelling the persecution of his followers. "Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake." Matthew 24. When affliction or persecution ariseth for the word's sake, immediately they are offended. Mark 4:1. See also chapter 10:30. "They shall lay hands on you and persecute you, delivering you up to the synagogues and into prisons, being brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And ye shall be betrayed both by parents and brethren and kinsfolks and friends, and some of you shall they cause to be put to death." Luke 21:1-6. See also chapter 11:49. "The time cometh that he that killed you will think that he doeth God service, and these things will they do unto you, because they have not known the Father, nor me. But these things have I told you, that when the time shall come, ye may remember that I told you of them." John 16:4. See also chapter 15:2, chapter 11:1. 33. I am not entitled to argue from these passages that Christ actually did foretell these events and that they did accordingly come to pass, because that would be at once to assume the truth of the religion. But I am entitled to contend that one side or other of the following disjunction is true: either that the evangelists have delivered what Christ really spoke, and that the event corresponded with the prediction, or that they put the prediction into Christ's mouth, because at the time of writing the history, the event had turned out so to be. For the only two remaining suppositions appear in the highest degree incredible, which are either that Christ filled the minds of his followers with fears and apprehensions without any reason or authority for what he said, and contrary to the truth of the case, or that, although Christ had never foretold any such thing, and the event would have contradicted him if he had, yet historians who lived in the age when the event was known, falsely, as well as officiously, ascribed these words to him. Thirdly, these books abound with exhortations to patience and with topics of comfort under distress. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. Romans 8:35-37. We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Cast down, but not destroyed. Always bearing about in the body the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be made manifest in our body. Knowing that he which raised up the Lord Jesus shall raise us up also by Jesus, and shall present us with you. For which cause we faint not. But, though our outward man perish, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. Corinthians 9:1-6:1. Take, my brethren, the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. James 5:1-11. Call to remembrance the former days in which, after ye were illuminated, ye endured a great fight of afflictions, partly whilst ye were made a gazing-stock both by reproaches and afflictions, and partly whilst ye became companions of them that were so used. For ye had compassion of me in my bonds, and took joyfully the spoiling of your goods, knowing in yourselves that ye have in heaven a better and an enduring substance. Cast not away therefore your confidence, which hath great recompense of reward, for ye have need of patience, that after ye have done the will of God, ye might receive the promise. Hebrews 10:32-36. So that we ourselves glory in you in the churches of God, for your patience and faith in all your persecutions and tribulations that ye endure, which is a manifest token of the righteous judgment of God, that ye may be counted worthy of the kingdom for which ye also suffer. Thessalonians 5:45. We rejoice in hope of the glory of God, and not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. Romans 3:4. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened unto you, but rejoice, inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings. Wherefore let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing, as unto a faithful Creator. Peter 4:2-3:1. What could all these texts mean, if there was nothing in the circumstances of the times which required patience, which called for the exercise of constancy and resolution? Or will it be pretended that these exhortations, which, let it be observed, come not from one author, but from many, were put in merely to induce a belief in after ages, that the Christians were exposed to dangers which they were not exposed to, or underwent sufferings which they did not undergo? If these books belong to the age to which they lay claim, and in which age, whether genuine or spurious, they certainly did appear, this supposition cannot be maintained for a moment, because I think it impossible to believe that passages, which must be deemed not only unintelligible, but false, by the persons into whose hands the books upon their publication were to come, should nevertheless be inserted, for the purpose of producing an effect upon remote generations. In forgeries which do not appear till many ages after that to which they pretend to belong, it is possible that some contrivance of that sort may take place, but in no others can it be attempted.